يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series taking a close look at the Middle East, North Africa region. Well, hello everybody, and a very warm welcome to Middle East Analysis. This is a Middle East Analysis special. We have done a few of these in recent times. Great joy to do it as well. As normal, I'm joined by Dr. Harry Hagopian in the chair opposite me, international lawyer, analyst and expert on the Middle East, North Africa region. Harry, how are you?
James, it's always a pleasure, whether it's a special MEA or whether it's a run-of-the-mill MEA. It's fun to discuss the Middle East, North Africa and Gulf with you and to engage our listeners also to the realities in those parts of the world where they might not be very familiar with.
And this is not a run-of-the-mill Middle East analysis, because our guest, whom we're very lucky to have joining us, is Father Gabriel Romanelli, parish priest of the Holy Family Church in Gaza. Father, welcome. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for this possibility.
Now, we look to Gaza with very heavy hearts at the moment. Terrible to see. Can you tell us a little bit, first of all, why you're not in Gaza, and tell us how the community is at the moment?
So, unfortunately, I am outside the Gaza Strip, because when I started this war on September 7th, I was in Bethlehem to reach some medicines for one of our sisters inside. And for this day was denied the permission to re-enter. I hoped to reach my community, but until now was impossible. The Christian community inside the Gaza Strip suffered as all the citizens there. The majority of Christians choose to take refuge in the churches there, so in the Greek Orthodox Church and in the Catholic Church. And until now, we have hundreds of people there. So it's a bad situation. There is a little better than the other of the rest of the society, but we try to help everyone.
And of course, when we look on from over here, it's a terrible tragedy to behold. But the Pope Francis has a pastoral concern, a strong pastoral concern for you and your community. Tell us a little bit about what he has said to you.
So it's wonderful things, it's incredible things that from the beginning of the war, and I was in Bethlehem 2 days after the beginning of the war, called me in my cell phone. And told, yo soy el Papa, I am the Pope, and how are you, how is the situation? And from this day, they called every single day, speak with me, or with Father Joseph. Father Joseph is my vicar in Gaza Strip. He belongs to the same congregation, the Incarnate Word Congregation, is a Catholic missionary congregation from Argentina. And so he's now in Gaza Strip, Father Joseph. So every day the Pope calls to Father Joseph or to me to give his blessing, to ask some question, to ask from us to protect the children and to feel the closeness of the Catholic Church and millions and millions of the people. Even the day when the Pope was sick with a very weak voice, he told us, okay, I am with you. I pray for you. I work for the peace of Israel or Palestine. So we are, we thanks to the Holy Father and the Church for this closeness.
Now, you've obviously been in the Holy Land for nearly 3 decades. You know it very well. I would imagine, apart from those trying to bring humanitarian aid, there are very few people that actually want to go back into Gaza. But of course you do, because these are your people. So it must be incredibly difficult for your heart to be separated from them.
This is true. When I consider why the God wants I be separate from a flock, at least for this moment, the first days I didn't understand. After I understood that it's better perhaps also for the people there to continue to ask praying and to help them for different ways. So it's not easy for me to be far from them, because many the diet of many people of our community, of the Bong, to the all our neighbors, or so on. But we try to keep in touch spiritually and to continue to work and to pray for them.
I'm going to bring you in, Harry, at this point, because, I mean, I'm very moved by that, obviously. But the Christians are but a tiny, tiny group in Gaza in particular, and we'll talk about the wider Holy Land. But they really contribute very heavily and with open hearts themselves to the wider community, don't they? So it seems to me that even in the face of all this, the Christians are, as we would hope, peacemakers and bridge builders.
Yes, they are. I mean, in a sense, I understand that the separation that Father Gabriel has from his parish, from his church, from his flock is difficult, and he takes it with a heavy heart. However, one of the advantages, because every cloud has a silver lining, and the silver lining, as far as I'm concerned, is that him being outside Gaza means that he can actually speak about Gaza, about the situation in Gaza, about the reality of the communities in Gaza, including the Christian community. Because remember, he is unable to go in, but many people are unable to come out too. So that flow is not happening. And he wouldn't be here sitting in front of you in studio today talking about the community if he had not been caught in Bethlehem when the war started on the 7th of October, because that is pretty much the chronology that is being used. But it's also very important what he says and the conversations we're having, because from my own experience over many, many years, working with the Middle East Council of Churches, working with the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, working with the World Council of Churches, I have come to the realization that when you talk to the ordinary man or woman in the UK, in Europe and elsewhere, and you tell them about Gaza, they automatically, particularly after the 7th of October, after the terror attack on the Gaza envelope, they automatically say, oh, Gaza is basically a den of terrorists. It is not. First of all, most people, the majority of the people, are not. They're ordinary human beings, men, women, and children like you and me, who happen to be there. Somebody would say, who have the misfortune of being there. But the other thing that is also important is within that larger population in Gaza, there is also a Catholic and Greek Orthodox and Christian community. Now, talk to anybody in the street. Go with your vox pop now and ask somebody, by the way, what do you know of Christians in Gaza? They would look at you aghast, like, what Christians in Gaza? And those Christians have been there for years. It's almost a biblical story. And in a sense, the Christians have never in the Middle East talked about numbers, which is why whenever you and I have discussed this, I've always said it's not always the numbers that count. What counts is the witness, is what the Christians do. And this is where it matters. The schools, the parishes, the humanitarian aid, all this that happens, because that's part and parcel of the vocation of the Christian man or woman, and this is what is happening in Gaza, just as it is happening across the whole MENA region.
And going back to your community, the small community, punching very well above its weight, as in better times it did, you know, even the COVID care, you look at what the community did to provide for all during that time, and they were still tough times. This is the hardest of times with a humanitarian disaster on our hands. What do your people need now?
So our community was a tiny community and unfortunately became smaller in this day. We lost around 25% of our community by death and by emigration in these last 6 months. At the beginning of this war, we were 1,017 people, Catholic, Orthodox, so all Christian community there. And unfortunately, we lost by death 33 people. 20 of death were killed by the IDF operation, bomb and sniper, according to the information for example, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem and the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem, and the other 13, especially for the lack of the opportunities to be cured, to arrive the medicines or to arrive to the hospitals. And around 240 Christians emigrate in different countries and different way. So the situation is very hard because our church, we try to be always an oasis, but our church became a refuge, shelter for the Christian community especially, and for our 54 children of Mother Teresa with special needs. So we arrived to receive 700 people inside the compound, and now there are around 500. And in spite of this, we try to help thousands of our neighbors, so Muslim neighbors. Gaza is a very tough piece of land, but it's a holy land. As we know, the Christian Palestine inside Gaza Strip, they are the descendants of the first disciples of Christ. And in spite of this, many of them also are refugees from other cities from the Holy Land, from Jaffa, now Tel Aviv, or from Mijdal, now Ashkelon, or from Jerusalem itself. So the feeling of the people is very complicated because they belong to this land. This land belongs to them, to the Palestinian also, and to the Christian Palestinian, because the Christian are the members of the same society. But in the same time, it is necessary to think about the future of their sons. So they try to be good, but many of them, unfortunately, they have not hope that the situation will be better. So we try to help all the people, and we respect the decision of the people if they decide to be there and to go out. But unfortunately, there is not a permission for all the people to take this decision. The majority of the population were in prison in Gaza. So until now, Gaza is a prison. It's not only a huge prison, it's a huge camp for the distress, and it's a cemetery also for thousands and thousands of people. So this is the situation. We try to help the families are present in the compound. Yes, provide water. We have a small spring of water. We take this water and we distribute also in the neighbors, so the civilian Muslims, all the people in the neighbors and inside the compound. And every kind of food we find, we buy and we try to distribute to everyone.
And you have vulnerable people as well, don't you? You have disabled children and orphans, and the sisters have long looked after people that are in great need. They must have very specific needs that aren't being met now.
So, on the beginning of the war, were 54 children. So children and aged people with special disabilities. Unfortunately, after 6 months, we lost seven of them. Seven children died, especially for the lack of medicines or the lack of electricity to make the oxygen, for example, machine. Never we reach this number. And for us, they are our protectors in heaven, these children. But it's a sign of the horrible situation, the hell of a Gaza situation. Because these innocent victims, that they lived with the Mother Teresa sister, so the angel of Gaza, we can say. And also this house was bombing. Also, we lost seven children. So, and this is a sign of this tragedy.
Now, Harry, you actually acknowledged that terror attack on the 7th. And we talked about the horrors of that. But Father Gabriel has just very eloquently explained these things that do pull at our heartstrings, because it's awful. And no matter, we are on the side of the human here. And how can anyone deny these horrors that are happening right now? Almost to the point that, you know, something has to change now. What, in your opinion, should happen at this point?
Well, the first thing I would say is that when we talk about the terror attack on the 7th of October, the first thing is that the whole conflict between Israelis and Palestinians did not start on the 7th of October. It has a whole history. Some people take that history to 67. Some people take that history to 48. There is a continuity there that needs to be respected. The other thing I would say is that when you talk about what is happening today, after the 7th, with the attack that is now almost entering its 7th month, it is important to realize that there are over 34,000 Palestinians who have been killed in Gaza in 6 months. We're not talking about 6 years. And those 34,000 are only the numbers that we have counted. If you start clearing the rubble, there is going to be far more than that. And you were talking now with Father Gabriel about Gaza being an open-air prison. I'm not going to use my words. I'm going to use the words of one of the politicians in the European Union in Brussels, who said that for 16 years, Gaza has been an open-air prison. Today, Gaza is an open-air graveyard. In French, un charnier. It is where all these people have died, and some of them are still, the corpses are still littered in the streets. This is the reality today of Gaza. So the two things I would say are, on a practical level, the first thing that needs to be done as a first step, it's not a solution, the solution is much more long-term, is to have a ceasefire. And for world politicians to sit and quibble over, is it a ceasefire? No, it's a temporary pause. No, it's only for 4 weeks. No, we can give it 6 weeks. No, we will not give you a ceasefire before you release all the hostages. This undervalues the humanity of what is happening in that part of the world. That is something that we need to take into consideration. And once you do the ceasefire, and then you start thinking of what are going to be the next steps that need to be taken in order to be able to stop the carnage, stop the war, stop the vengeful attacks, and begin to think of a political solution. Because at the end of the day, it is not the war that is going to resolve this issue. It is talking. And Sir Winston Churchill has one of his famous talks, "Don't war war, talk talk." And I'm paraphrasing. And it is important for people to sit. Now, what can the churches do? The churches, whether the very, very tiny, infinitesimal community that exists in Gaza, which is a token community that reminds us of biblical times, or whether it's the church outside Gaza, even outside the Holy Land, because it is quite haggard in the Holy Land as well, is to try and constantly talk, to use the prophetic values that we have as Christians to say, we need peace, we need to stop the war, and not be politicians. The problem with some church people is that they sometimes forget that they are priests and think they are politicians. And it is important that the church speaks out loudly in order to have a ceasefire and in order to bring justice into the situation. I had this morning an interview with ABC. And in the interview at ABC, and they said, okay, how do you see this resolving itself beyond the ceasefire? I said, listen, we've been talking about this for years and years, ages. The church leaders of the 13 hierarchical churches or traditional churches in the Holy Land, everybody else has been talking, we need justice in order to have peace and in order to have security. And that is what applies in Gaza, as well as across the whole conflict, that incidentally, James, doesn't only affect Gaza or the West Bank or Jenin or Nablus or Bethlehem or Hebron. it also affects Lebanon, it affects Iraq, it affects Syria, and if we want to go beyond the region, as we saw recently, it affects America and Iran as well. So it is time to start thinking rather than just acting.
Yeah, very well put. Father Gabriel, so let's look beyond the ceasefire, to use that phrase that Harry came out with. I fear, and I'm sure you fear, for the future and for a generation of people that will be made orphans. You talked about the young people. There are going to be, there's going to be great damage long, 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 long down the track. What can we do, do you think, to take care of the people, especially the children, because they're going to need an awful lot of recovery, aren't they?
So I convince also that our Christian identity is the more important things, but it's not the only things. For example, in our very small community, we try to offer, especially for the children and teenagers, the oratory. The oratory means the spiritual club. No? So we teach them about the faith, we pray together, but also develop the skills of the children, of teenagers, with playing. I will take some lessons. And after all this period, we restart operating the oratory inside. Thanks to Father Yusuf and Sister Pilar and Sister Socorro and some teenagers. It's a crazy thing, but we try to give the possibility and to create the environment, even inside Gaza, the different environment for the children and the teenager, that all their life will bring this this war. It's impossible that separate the situation. When we said that our church, our paradise on earth, become a shelter and become a hospital, it's not only figurative sense. Because we made surgeries inside the compound, and the surgeries for the wounded people, so inside the compound. We received more than 20 people were wounded in the San Porfirio's attack, Greek Orthodox Church. So the children saw all that. The children saw the funerals, take part of the funerals. But We try to sing with them, we try to restart their life, and we don't know the future. As Christian, we are the son of the Calvary, and this is true, but also we are the sons of the resurrection, and this is our secret mystery, and we can help the Palestinian society and also the Israeli society and all the society in the world to try and to be a prophet in the good meanings of the term. But this is not easy. This is not easy because the war is a consequence. This situation is a consequence for many, many years of the conflict is running. And it is necessary to stop and to find the solution. Why? There is millions of people, almost 6 million Palestinian people. So it's necessary for the peace, for the life of the Israeli society, as the Palestinian society as well, and for many other societies, even in the West, in our countries, it is necessary to find a solution. But the first step is the ceasefire. It's not the solution, but it's necessary first step. Unfortunately, many leaders in the world, they agree that the war continues. And this is a crime.
Father Gabriel, I'm going to stay with you, and then Harry, I'll ask you for your final thoughts. You talked about the sons of Calvary and the sons of the resurrection. I think that's beautiful, actually, even in the face of this terrible, terrible tragedy. And one thing I did see over the Easter period were those pictures from your parish. And I thought, am I looking at the same thing here? It was actually very beautiful. It lifted me up a bit. It was, I thought, look at there are smiling faces. How can you smile in this? How can you, we sort of project our own anxiety on other people. But your community, full of joy, full of the light in the darkness, the light of Christ. How did you feel when you looked upon I know you wanted to be there, I'm sure, but how did you feel when you looked upon those Easter masses?
So, as priests, we used to share in the same day, you know, the funeral, the baptism, but I think the Christian community in Gaza used also to share this different feeling. But our faith, the faith, our hope in Jesus the Lord, in our Blessed Mother, is strong. The charity also. And this is not only the characteristic of our community. I think the Christian of Middle East, this tiny flock of Christ in his land, in his holy land, all the Middle East, is very strong in faith. Perhaps not in number, but as you said some minutes ago, during the COVID crisis, the Catholic community, we were 135 people. And thanks God, we assist more than 45,000 people. So that means more than 65% of the cases inside Gaza Strip. So this is the power and the sign of power of our faith, with humility, I said. But it is necessary to continue to try. Our power is not in our words, in our facts, it's in the grace of the Lord. And we love all the people, Muslim, Jewish, atheist. So we are convinced that every human being is created as image of the Holy Trinity, as redeemed by the holy blood of Christ. And this is our mission in Gaza and everywhere. Perhaps it's a little harder in Gaza, but all the world is the Valley of Tears.
Oh my goodness, Harry, I have to say, I think as a Catholic, as a Christian, I can't fail to be moved by that. Sum up for us your feelings on this, having heard Father Gabriel talking about his ministry.
Look, there are a few feelings, and some of them are conflictual in terms of what I hear and what I see and what I read and what I know. The first thing to say is that the Christian community in Gaza, this tiny little community, is doing a great job, not only for their own community, but for the whole strip. And that is something that we shouldn't forget. And they're not doing it just so that they get headlines in the newspapers or so that Father Gabriel comes and tells you about it. They do it because that is the ethos, that is the inner calling of Christians to help everybody. So in a sense, this is wonderful. Multiply that by the Christian communities across the whole MENA region. They're also doing their best, as best they can. But there are a few lessons that need to be drawn also from what we have been speaking about. The first one is that we should not, in the West, constantly distinguish between Palestinian Christians and Palestinian Muslims, between Arab Christians and Arab Muslims. These are people who have been living together across history. Their culture is not that different one from the other. Their faith is, but not necessarily their culture and their societies. So we have to understand that when in the West people talk, oh, these poor Christians, they are there in the middle of that mass of Arabs or Muslims, that is totally disingenuous. These people were born there. These people went to school there. These people were raised there. These people married there. These people are buried there. So in a sense, we have to take that on board. The other thing we need to take on board is that we need not constantly revive this business of war. How many times has Gaza been hit? It's not the first time. How many wars have there been in Gaza? What have those wars resolved? Nothing. It's politicians playing games in order to move forward with their own objectives and their own ideologies. And that has to stop. I come back to the same thing. I've done this in Track 2 negotiations. I've done this across the years. In order to quote one of my favorite Christian leaders in Jerusalem, His Beatitude Patriarch Emeritus Michel Sabah, he used to say, Harry, security and peace can only happen when there is justice. The minute we understand this, and the minute we forget in the West thinking as colonizers or as previous colonizers, and we start thinking as people who want to facilitate a solution, that's when we shift gears in order to find a solution. But the longer we think as colonizers or former colonizers, the more we think as people who only look at interests rather than at the value of human beings, this conflict is not going to be resolved, neither in Ramallah, nor in Jerusalem, nor in Tel Aviv, nor in Gaza. There has to be a metanoia, a renewal that would lead to a solution to this. And in that solution, while people are looking for that solution, tiny Christian communities from Gaza to Jerusalem, from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, from Bethlehem to Nablus, from Nablus to Jordan, to Lebanon, to Egypt, to Syria, to Iraq, even places as far-flung as Libya and Morocco, there are Christians who are following their witness in the hope, as Father Gabriel said, and this is something that I always subscribe to, yes, there was a crucifixion, but then came a resurrection. And the piece we forget sometimes is that after the resurrection, there was also an ascension.
Goodness me, you've both spoken so powerfully. But the final word to you, Father Gabriel. What can Catholics in England and Wales do to support you and your people?
I think there are three lines to help. First of all is the prayer. So it's necessary to pray a lot, to pray to the King of Peace, Jesus Christ and Our Lady. Second is to speak and to understand the situation and to find the good words to speak about the conflict with wisdom, with justice, with charity, of course. But this is necessary to understand. This is a part of the contribution to the Christian community also in England and Wales to help the Israeli and Palestinian society to understand and to and everyone in his place to speak or to try to explain with prudence, with wisdom, with passions, but also it's necessary and it's a line of work. And the third is the help, the material help. I think, from my experience, and especially in these days, through the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem, so the Catholic Diocese in Holy Land, means in this part of the Holy Land, Palestine, Jordan, Israel, and Cyprus, because the Latin Patriarchate has experience, and not only he tries and continues to help all the population there.
Very well said. Harry, you want a final word?
Let me just remind you of a couple of words in our Lord's Prayer. In Arabic, I'll start it with Arabic. Atina khubzana kafafa yawmina. In English, give us today our daily bread. In Gaza today, there is famine, there is starvation. In North Gaza, more than in the south, north of the Wadi, more than south of the Wadi. But it is imperative that we stop playing politics and allow people to have their piece of bread, because some people have been basically eating chicken feed and grass in order to sustain themselves. And that, to me, is a reflection not on their reality, but on ours here.
So in which case, perhaps we could finish with one of those three pillars, finish with prayer. Now, I can't speak Arabic, you both know that, but perhaps you could say the Lord's Prayer for us in Arabic.
Father Gabriel.
Yes, of course. And we remind that this prayer in Arabic is very close to in Hebrew also, speaker, no? In Abinu, Abana, in Arabic, Abinu, in Hebrew and also Aramaic. So we pray for all Christians, community, for all the inhabitants in the Holy Land, and we ask for our Father, the peace in our hearts and the peace in our societies. أبانا الذي في السماوات ليتقدس اسمك لآتي ملكوتك لتكن مشيئتك كما في السماء كذلك على الأرض أعطنا خبزنا كفاف يومنا واغفر لنا خطايانا كما نحن نغفر لمن أخطأ إلينا ولا تدخلنا في التجارب لكن نجنا من الشرير آمين
آمين.
I think we leave the last word with God. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.